Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. Coming up on the weekend edition, the Obamacare repeal has failed in the Senate. It was close, but they did not get enough votes. What happens now? Less people, it turns out, are getting married than in the past, but they're not what you would call single. The first human embryos have been edited in the U.S. Interesting, scientific development doesn't seem like a great idea. And what happened to the biblical Canaanites? There's some new scientific research that actually confirms the Bible, though it tries to deny it. That and more, this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau here today. A little bit of rain over the last 24 hours or so. Just a hint, just a touch to keep the dust down. Oklahoma is one of the odder places in terms of what happens when it rains, in my experience. Not that I've been all over, but the places I've been. After it rains, my car is dirtier than before it rained. And in most places I've been, that's rain will clean your car, but here it's dirtier, so because of the dust or something.
Yeah, I think when it rains, your car gets wet, obviously.
Yeah.
I think that's what happens. And then and then the wind, because it's so windy, the wind blows the dust and the dirt onto your car. So even though it's the water takes off whatever was on there, the wind just puts more of it back on.
Insult to injury.
Yeah.
But we certainly could use some. It's been warm. However, we're getting into this stretch of days. If you can believe the weatherman, where it's going to be highs in the upper 80s, you know, for early August, late July, early August, that's pretty remarkable. That's our hottest time usually. So, you know, I remember some years where it's like, oh, it's only going to be 102 today. Like, that'll be a little better. But no, we're down into a cooler temperature. So I'm happy. But Grant, you say you love the hot weather. So maybe you're a little disappointed.
I'm a little disappointed, but at least everyone else is happy. I'll deal with that.
That's a very generous attitude that you have there. looking out for the others. Interesting note last night from Major League Baseball. New York Yankee star Aaron Judge was very excited, as was his team, when the Yankees won. After a teammate had a hit. And so they all, you know, sometimes the team all jumps around together and they're all excited. He banged his face off of the teammate's batting helmet and he chipped his tooth. So, you know, in a way, everything's going right for that guy. He's a rookie. He's playing in New York. He's having a great season. But then there's those little reminders along the way that, yeah, stupid things still happen to people and busted his tooth up.
He's still immortal. Yeah, the guy hit a walk-off home run and they were all piling around home plate. And I think it was the guy's helmet who hit the home run that actually was picked up by a teammate, and then while they were all jumping around in the huddle together, the helmet came up a little too high out of someone's hands and it smacked him right in the chin. And you can actually see on the video a little white piece flying out of his mouth.
Wow. That's unfortunate way for that to happen. I'm sure he's got a good dental plan. He'll probably be okay. There was a really neat story the other night on the news. This speaking of baseball, there was a little league player, I think 12, 13 years old, and he wanted this bat. It was a really nice bat, and so his dad finally bought him the bat, and they recorded him getting it and put it on YouTube like a year ago, and it went viral because the kid was so excited he started crying. It's the bat that he wanted. Fast forward a year, kid's using the bat. He hits a home run to win the game, and his dad catches it in the stands. And they filmed that, too. The dad was filming it on his phone, and he caught the winning home run that his son had hit with the bat that he bought him. So is that like a movie? It's got to be a movie there somewhere.
Has to be staged. There's no way that's real.
That's amazing. Just an amazing story. So they had a little feature on the national news, and I was kind of laughing because the dad's sitting there with his son. And I would guess that they interviewed them for quite some time. But when you edit it down for the story, it's like a minute. And so the dad makes a couple of comments, and the kid's just sitting there smiling. And I thought, I wonder how much he actually said. And he got his moment of fame, but not really. He didn't get to say anything. But that was a really cool story. Here's a couple of funny notes. This is from the Huffington Post. I like some of their funny stuff when it's not politically motivated. And this is some funniest tweets from parents this week. So if you're a parent and you have children, you know, there's certain things that happen and people like to tweet about them, and you might appreciate some of these. One person tweeted, "I love my kids, but I also love reminding them how many more days until school starts."
Oh.
There's some truth to that. You know, how many days till school? Here's another one. If you enjoy sipping your morning coffee while listening to a nonstop harmonica solo, then having kids is right for you. That's very true. Happens in our house. It's not harmonica, but it is. There are certain instruments because that's part of the routine. They've got to get some practice in early, so you're sipping your coffee and they're hammering away.
Or if they don't even play an instrument, that person might not even play the harmonica officially.
Right.
Just wanted to make some noise early in the morning while everyone else is trying to wake up still.
That's right. And the last one here, there's a lot that they put up, but I just grabbed a few. There was those commercials from years ago where they would list several things and what they cost, and then at the end say, you know, family time together, priceless. So this is a kind of a parody on that commercial. This woman writes, "The mall. Lunch, $24. Frozen yogurt, $12. Quarter rides, $5. The look on the children's faces when they get new Build-A-Bears, priceless. Just kidding, it's $84.
You have to buy those looks.
You got to buy those. So I thought that one was pretty good. And I have gone to the Build-A-Bear at least once. Have you guys ever been there for that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
On my honeymoon, I went there with my wife. We got bears that commemorate the milestone in our lives.
You put the little heart in them? Because that was part of the process when I went. Like, you pick up the little heart and you stick it inside of the...
Yeah. My wife kept smacking me not to roll my eyes or do something like that when we were doing through that. Because I just, I'm like, okay, let's get a move on here. Let's just get... I want to put the clothes or whatever on the bear. I just want to get the fun part. I don't care about what he looks like on the inside.
Yeah. They used to sell little stuffed animals at Starbucks. I don't think they do that anymore. I haven't seen it, but they used to do that. So my wife and I were dating. I occasionally would buy her one of those as a little surprise. And so we still have one of them. It's a little bear wearing a raincoat. So anyway.
Hey, he's ready for today.
He's ready for today.
And Starbucks go way back.
We do, yeah. Actually, I never went there until my wife took me there when we were dating.
Wow.
That was my first experience with. I have never looked back. We have a story about them later, too. They're actually shutting down, not the Starbucks, but something else they own. That's a teaser, by the way. Here's a story from Bloomberg. Obamacare repeal collapses as Senate GOP blocks health bill. A months-long effort by Senate Republicans to pass health legislation collapsed early Friday after GOP senator, supposed GOP senator, John McCain joined two of his colleagues to block a stripped-down Obamacare repeal bill. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said, "I regret that our efforts were simply not enough this time. It's a disappointing moment. It's time to move on," he said. And so the decision by McCain to vote no came after weeks of brinksmanship and after his dramatic return from cancer treatment to cast the 50th vote to start the debate on the bill earlier this week. The GOP's skinny repeal, as they call it, was defeated 49-51. So if they had gotten all the Republicans to vote for it, they would have passed it. So that's where it sits now. President Trump tweeted, "Well, let it fail, Obamacare." So a lot of different thought about it. The comments I've read, if that's any indication, were mostly upset that they didn't pass it. And that was coming from more of a liberal website. So I'm not sure what the sentiment is out there. I don't think people like Obamacare, but I don't know that they like the new alternatives either.
We were so close to being set free from Obamacare, at least partially. It's too bad that some of the Republicans jumped to the other side of the fence there.
Yeah. Some people are saying, well, the Republicans aren't sure what the government's role in healthcare should be.
It should be none.
Yeah. Well, you know, if somebody's got a serious condition, they're going through that whole process, they're probably thinking about things in a certain way. Well, a lot of people are just thinking about, hey, I want the choice. You know, I want the choice to whether or not I've got to pay X amount of dollars every month. It is very expensive. Obviously, everybody knows that. The quote-unquote affordable health care, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It's affordable if you have absolutely nothing and they give it to you for free. If you're like a lot of people and you have to pay for it, you're paying quite a bit. And then, of course, the deductible is through the roof. So it's not affordable in any way for most people. And like they say, well, the Democrats are happy to change it, but they just want to know, you know, what they're going to do. And it's so funny to me because I just think back to the last administration. Like every time something kind of got stalled, President Obama would always come out and say, "Hey, well, they're not willing to work with me. Nobody's willing to do anything." Well, isn't this the same thing? No one's willing to work with the other side here?
Yeah, to me, this is one of the most frustrating things I've seen because Republicans have been complaining for a long time about the Affordable Care Act. They've been waiting for their moment to actually do something about it, and now they have their moment. They have a majority in the Senate and the House. They can basically do whatever they want if they can get united on it. But it's the three people there doing it more of spite of President Trump, I think, of anything noble in terms of like what they actually think about healthcare. And so, I don't know, it's just there's enough public sentiment. People elected President Trump and the Republicans to do this. And so I don't think the voters are going to be happy with them for that. And to me, it's just a wasted opportunity because what if the Democrats get back the Senate or something like that in a year or two and they still didn't do anything about it, then they lost their chance. To me, it's just there's a small window to act on Obamacare. And if they lose it, then we're going to be left in a perpetual cycle to where we bankrupt ourselves.
Well, and kind of the irony of it is with Senator McCain there is he's in the midst of all this medical treatment. He doesn't have the Affordable Care Act. They've got the special plan,
yeah.
Right? So they're voting on things that affect other people but not themselves, and that's always a very interesting angle to come at it from because you don't have any skin in the game, literally. I mean, you have something else, but you're voting on what everybody else gets. That's an interesting thing as well.
Yeah, I think with Senator McCain, I have a lot of respect for him, for his career and what he did in the Army, Air Force, and everything, but I think he's been a senator for 20 years, something like that. It's been a long time. And this is probably one of the biggest moments where Republicans can change America like the way they want to, and he's actually the roadblock to his party. And now there could be some principles. Some people might agree with him, but at the same time, I don't know. I think to me it's more about legacy than practical health care at this point.
Yeah, and there is the question, too, of, well, at what point are you not fit for office anymore because of health conditions? I don't know. I have no idea, but the guy has a brain tumor, right? So, yeah. I mean, that is something people are asking. Like, well, if you have some severe medical condition, and he's leaving right away to go to, like, have these big treatments, are you in a condition to do that? It is an interesting situation, and I don't have any big necessarily thought on it, but it does seem like there is at least a question there as to are you in the right state to even make a decision in that way? I don't know. It's a question.
Well, he has long been every leftist's favorite Republican, and that's a very bad sign. Whenever you have the left-wing media consistently having him on the air to sort of criticize what the rest of the Republicans are trying to do, you know that he's not really solidly on one side. And in a lot of these issues, you can't afford to be in the middle on them. I mean, especially something like this that does affect so many people, and you take away a fundamental liberty of the American people. Healthcare is not a right, but it is a choice. Now they're trying to change it into a right and not a choice anymore. And that it's supposed to be the other way around, where you have a choice on what you do.
Yeah, very interesting. When the Obamacare passed, that was just a straight Democrat vote down the line, right? Nobody defected. Yeah. If nothing else, you can say that they at least have their people in line.
They sure do. They completely vote as a block every time.
Yeah, and the same can't be said for the other side. So it is interesting. We'll see what happens from there. I mean, like President Trump said, and I think he's probably right, well, just let it fail. I mean, it's going to. It is. It's failing everywhere you look. Nobody can afford it. The insurance companies are pulling out. Okay, I mean, we can keep living the dream that somehow in some magic land everyone has free health care, but the reality is it's not going to work. And then what?
You know? Yeah, I can kind of understand the sentiments of people who are worried about, you know, especially those who have to live in the hospital, basically, if they're not going to be able to afford it. But at the same time, I can't imagine a situation where someone shows up to the hospital and then doesn't have the tens of thousands of dollars needed for the procedure and is just left to die outside the doors. Definitely in this country, people are still taken care of, but it shouldn't be up to everyone else to pay for those people.
Yeah, it's well, the whole system is just so backwards. I mean, in terms of how much things cost, the prices are inflated so high that nobody could afford it. So the whole thing, and I think that's what a lot of people are saying, well, you got to start from scratch, but good luck. There's so many – the infrastructure is already built. A lot of people are making money, and so, you know, starting from scratch is maybe a noble idea, but it's too big. It's too big to fail until it does. Here's another story from Bloomberg as well. They say, why you're being invited to fewer weddings? I thought people just didn't like me. And that might be the case, but they say fewer people are getting married. Many couples are waiting longer and longer to schedule their weddings. In 2015, the median first-time American bride was almost 28 years old, and the median groom was about 30. 10 years earlier, it was 25 and 27. Excuse me. They say the U.S. marriage rate. Sorry, I got choked up there. They say the U.S. marriage rate, the number of new marriages per 1,000 people, has been falling for decades. It fell especially fast during the recession in 2008 and 2009, but there's little evidence that people started getting married again after the economy recovered. Wink, wink. I don't think the economy's recovering, but maybe even some indicators. The research firm predicts, and the research firm is Ibis World, they predict that marriage rate will keep falling over the next 5 years. And in Europe, here's a key point, I think. In Europe and increasingly in the U.S., many couples are postponing marriage indefinitely as it becomes more socially acceptable for couples to live together and have children outside of marriage. So people aren't being single, they're just not getting married. And so those numbers are dropping quite a bit. Herbert Armstrong predicted that years ago, that you know, there's a booklet on thetrumpet.com. It's free. Why marriage soon obsolete? That's a question, right? Years ago, people would have thought, well, come on, we'll never get rid of marriage. It's happening in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I've talked to a lot of people or heard of a lot of people who have been in a relationship for well over a decade, and sometimes close to two decades, and still have never gotten married. And, I mean, if there's no difference before marriage and after marriage in the way that you can be intimate, that makes a big difference. And then, obviously, if there's a lack of trust and you don't know if once you get married you have to give up half of your assets in a divorce, there are some issues like that that people just don't really see the point of marriage anymore.
Yeah, there is no reason anymore for the way society is constructed in a lot of ways. And then it seems like every couple of weeks a story comes out in the headlines, you know, a horrific tale of a parent killing themselves and their children. And you can almost always guarantee the reason, and it's divorce settlement.
Yeah.
Somebody got upset, didn't go the way they wanted, and they wanted to get back at the other person. There was another story like that this week. Almost every time when you see that headline, that's the result. So people are looking at that. They're looking at the financial ruin, all these things, and they're just saying, hey, I don't want to get caught up in that.
Yeah, I think in our society, there's just a general, lack of knowing how to find a mate. We have apps now. We have computers telling us who we should marry or date or get to know. Usually our parents do that as well. And there's this many ways people go about trying to do it, but I think most people don't know how. And I think that's one of the bigger parts of why all these bad things happen is they don't know who to marry or who they should be in a relationship with. And so instead of finalizing with marriage, in a way, they just take the route where they stay a little skeptical of each other for a while. So I think some of it's just not knowing what to do or how to enter into a relationship, how to find someone.
And we're talking about the current generation being a generation that, in a lot of cases, saw divorce. They grew up in a divorced household, which is misery. And so if there's no, it gets back to morality. If there's no morality, if there's no laws governing how you conduct yourself before marriage and in marriage, then what do you have to go by? It's a free-for-all. Everybody wants the perks of being married, but they don't want the responsibilities or the commitments. And that's a hard way to live, too. There's a lot of misery because of that. There's not more happiness.
Yeah, that's right. And the way dating goes right now, I mean, there's a lot of immorality involved. There's the common joke, like, as long as you wait past the first date for intimacy, then at least you're doing something right. That's pretty much the only common rule anymore. And so there are plenty of people, I mean, you hear it on TV and in movies all the time, they get married just because of the physical attraction. There's nothing deeper there because it was never deeper in the dating stage. There wasn't a real mental and emotional connection made. It was just a physical connection. That's not really something where you feel closely enough attached to someone to really want to get married anyway.
It's a really good book to check out on thetrumpet.com, a free one, Why Marriage Soon Obsolete. You can't kick the rules of anything aside and think that the institution will exist. It just won't. In any level, in anything in life. And we're seeing that here with these marriage statistics. We mentioned Starbucks earlier. They're going to close down all their Teavana locations. That's going to impact 3,300 jobs. Goodbye, Teavana. If you like Teavana and their teas, you're going to not be able to find it in the mall anymore.
Yeah, it's well, not to say I'm surprised, because that seems like that's a pretty saturated market, like the tea and the coffee shops, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
What I'm interested, though, is that Starbucks had that luxury chain. I just wonder how that's doing.
I haven't heard anything about it. They say in their report, they said they're closing all of these Teavana stores. There's 379. But what they said is that the Starbucks stores are doing well. They're opening an average of one new one per day. I think that's globally. And they're expanding into China, which opens up a lot of things. So Starbucks is doing fine. This Teavana place is closing down, again, 3,300 jobs, but they're inviting them to apply at Starbucks. They're not being guaranteed a job. They're just being invited to apply. Like, isn't everybody invited to apply? Am I not being invited to apply there? So anyway, it's interesting. I can see why they would close down, though, like you said, Abraham, because I've been there a couple of times in our local one. It's okay. Like, if you want to go buy tea to take home and make later, it's fine. But it's a process that takes a lot while to get in and out of the store. The appeal of a Starbucks is you go in there, you order a drink, you drink it that right then. I mean, some people might go and buy actual coffee grounds, or I'm sure they do, but that's not, I don't think, why most people go to Starbucks. It's because I want the immediate drink now. If you go into a Teavana place and you order a drink, there's like 50 million options. You got to know stuff, and then it's expensive. And you're going to be standing there about 10 minutes. Well, the guy behind the counter tries to, like, oh, a little this, a little that. The whole thing is just not conducive to our, like, get it to me now, get it to me how I want to move on. And that's probably why they're closing down.
So there's different branches of Starbucks. Does Starbucks own Teavana?
Yeah.
And then there's also
they bought the
luxury brand. What is that called?
Well, I think it's still Starbucks. But they were opening one in Manhattan, I think, where it was like they gave you the privilege of paying like $12 for a latte instead of $5.
Wonderful.
It was supposed to be like special coffee, and then they've tried a few things. Like they tried to do like wine, and I don't know. If you go to a place that is a chain, but you go to a bigger city, it's always going to be a little better. You know, I went to, what did I go to? Sparrow's, I think it was, or something in New York City, Manhattan. And it was like two stories, and they were serving beer. I mean, it was like, what is this place?
So it's better than the one in our mall.
Yeah, you go to the one in the mall, and it's like one teenager giving you one piece of pizza.
Yeah.
But there, it was like a whole different thing. So I think, you know, just in general, some of those stores in the bigger cities, they just have more to offer because that's like their flagship store.
Yeah, it is always nice to see what the best these companies can offer, because I think a lot of times we see the worst. So I wonder what Waffle House is like in New York City. It's like two stories.
It's great.
Really nice.
Well, what I did find out, though, and people know this, I'm sure, if they've traveled around Manhattan in particular, if you go to a chain in Manhattan, a lot of times it's a lot more expensive than normal. If you go to a local place, then it's a little more reasonable price-wise. But, yeah, that reminds me of that. There was a funny line from that show, The Office, where the boss, who was a bit of an awkward guy, they went to Manhattan for something, and he said, like, yeah, let me take you to my special pizza place I know. And it was Sparrow's. You know? He thought it was a secret, best kept secret. It's like, it's in every mall in America. And that was a joke. It was pretty funny. So anyway, Teavana's closing its stores. They used to have somebody stand outside and try to get you to take a little free sample sometimes, I guess, on the higher traffic days. But somehow they always still have those little stands set up where they're driving like the little remote control cars, or they're flying an airplane or something. And those places are still in business. I would be bad at that job because I'd probably hit somebody or trip someone with the remote control car. You gotta be skilled in driving those things.
Yeah, I was just at the mall the other day going to see Dunkirk, and I went and saw Wonder Woman with my wife the night before. And
which one was it? Penn or Quail?
Quail Springs. Okay. And just the amount of obstacles, children, and people trying to sell me things I don't want, and just. And then the merchandise is outflowing from every corner of the mall. I just can't believe all those little kiosks they open.
Yeah.
Somehow, because I've never seen anyone buy something. I've bought something from them because I was suckered into it.
Me too.
I've never seen anyone else buy anything.
Exactly.
But all these other stores are closing down, but they're still there.
The key is you can't make eye contact and you can't respond.
Yeah.
You just have to keep walking.
It just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
They're human beings, and yet you just have to treat them like they're a cardboard cutout of a human being.
You got to give them the cold shoulder.
That's tough.
Yeah, you got to walk on by. I was actually walking by one the other day, and I was wearing a pair of tennis shoes. And the guy that was working there was like, nice kicks. So thanks.
That's all he had to say, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, there wasn't much else to say, I guess. But I think he was trying to sell something shoe-related, so I think that was his deal. Like, he wanted to sell you some sort of cleaning product or something, but feel good.
The one thing I got sold on actually turned out to be a really great gift for my wife. It was, like, some sort of Mediterranean sea salts that you scrub yourself with in the shower or something. So Turned out to be a pretty good gift, and I think she's still using it.
Yeah, well, they must make money. That's why they're
now she knows how I got that.
No, it was at the mall. Special import from... Yeah. The Key of David program's coming up in a bit here on KPCG this weekend. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. Check that out. And thetrumpet.com. Top story interview with Nicholas Frank. That's an interview they had a while ago. Highlights from Brad McDonald's interview with the son of Adolf Hitler's personal attorney. Pretty interesting insights there. And related to that, never trust the German, which is a quote, I believe, from Nicholas Frank. And that's also by Brad McDonald. So you can look at that at thetrumpet.com over the weekend. Grant, you've got a write-up for us here. Delling poll. This is from, I think, Breitbart. Trump's transgender military ban is the best thing ever, according to their estimation. Some don't agree, but some do feel that way.
Clearly, this guy's a bit biased, and at least he is an open opinion writer instead of trying to pretend to write objective news and then injecting opinion into that. But he does talk about how important this decision was because it was a complete and total rejection of political correctness and the social justice war that has been going on in every aspect of society. And it's also, there's a really funny tweet that kind of highlights a funny aspect of this as well. It says, Mr. Trump, he says, I bet I can get liberals to defend joining the army. And then James Mattis says, no way. And then Mr. Trump's like, hold my beer while I tweet. So that's what you've seen is an outpouring of people on the left condemning him because they say everyone should have the honor of joining the military, when in the past it was like no one should join.
Yeah, that's true. Just as far as the tweets and things are considered, he really does have sort of the U.S. anyway, and really the world in a lot of ways, kind of on a string there, to where whatever he tweets, there's like immediate reaction to it. So whether people like him or they don't, they're glued to whatever he says. So there's a lot of power in that.
There is. He definitely seems to know the exact right moment to choose to infuriate his enemies, and he sends them into such outrage that a normal person probably can't relate to those enemies very easily, because it's just a total meltdown. It's a freak out, and it's common sense that it would save over $8 million a year to keep them out. And also, those are not going to be some of the best soldiers. If you just think about it practically, are the biggest, toughest men going to be the best soldiers, or the ones who are confused about their gender identity?
It is funny how whenever there's conflict, you know, people would try to get out of the military in some cases, dodge the draft. And now people are fighting like mad to try to get into it. That'll be what people will say, I guess, if they ever do a draft again, which I don't think they will. But you could claim that, I guess, and just stay out of the military in general. It's just funny how that is kind of human nature, right? Like whatever you're told you can't do, you want to do. But if you're told like, hey, you could join, come on, people are like, I don't want to do that.
Right. It's like the Garden of Eden taking of the one tree that you can't just because you're told that you can't.
Yeah.
And there's no other reason. besides being told no. It's a really abrasive word for us to obey that a lot of the time. But this is a good point as well. Transgender people have actually become like political props to destroy everything that the left opposes. So you see them pushing those transgender LGBT rights on everyone and basically bullying any establishment that doesn't agree with it into shutting down.
Yeah, it's a really interesting tactic. And of course, there's that Supreme Court case coming up here in a little bit where they're going to look at the bakery situation. And that was in the news again this week. So that happened someplace else, too. And so then it becomes a religious question, and there's, you know, morality question. So there's a lot of interesting issues there. As we mentioned yesterday, CNN had a write up about it, that the left has said they're going to launch this culture war, which, of course, has been going on for years. But that's what we're seeing here in the U.S. We do see just this absolute war of cultures every single day playing out in the media, and I suppose on the streets as well. I mean, you do see. I've never really seen anybody having an argument about anything like that, but you can see the societal change, the way people, you know, different segments of society are starting to come into maybe a little more prominence. But the media definitely battles it out every single day over these culture issues,
and they have become really skilled at putting the spotlight on different groups they don't agree with and kind of shaming them into compliance. We've seen that a lot. The thing is, you're not going to be able to shut down the military. You can shut down a bakery here and there, but you can't necessarily shut down the military. That's not going to work. So it was a pretty good battle for Mr. Trump to choose to fight, because they can't really do much about this one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And I guess even, I mean, there is some question as to the legality, right? I mean, how they have to go about it. You can't just say you're not in there anymore, right? I mean, there is some sort of path that has to be taken to make it official.
Well, right now, or at least this morning, the heads of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Dunford, I think that's his name, General Dunford, he said that for now, transgenders can keep serving. There isn't going to be a change immediately to the policy for what it is. I don't know how long it will take to implement changes or how, like, the legalities of it all,
right.
But it looks like the wheels are starting to turn, but for right now, it's nothing's changed overnight. But, I mean, President Trump is the commander-in-chief. It's not something that needs to be legislated.
Oh, I see.
Unless there's a case, like a court case, or someone takes issue with it in the justice system. But I think he does have the right to make those kinds of policies, I believe.
Okay. So that'll be interesting. A lot of these things are coming up now that, you know, you do have to get back and kind of look at, okay, well, what's actual the law here? Because we've seen a lot of decrees sort of the last administration and this one as well. And you're like, okay, so what exactly can you decree and what can't you decree? And I would imagine that it will be a court issue. I would think somebody will bring it up just to, if nothing else, just have a distraction keep the topic out in the press for people to talk about.
That's true, and it's rough now to ever see something go before the courts, because you keep seeing them shut down the travel ban, and that's not allowed, and yet they do it. We're having a big issue with activist judges in this country, so even if the judges rule on it, you can't really trust absolutely that they're going to make the right decision. It's just going to be fascinating to watch how it all plays out. But this issue has caused a lot of problems in terms of the money, of course, but they've also spent a lot of time in sensitivity training seminars, trying to help people who aren't transgender treat the ones who are transgender delicately so that they don't get offended. That's just not how wars are won, this article points out. Whenever you get so focused on tiptoeing around other people's feelings so that you don't offend anybody, you're not necessarily focusing on battle tactics. You're not focusing on winning wars, absolutely, like Mr. Trump said the focus of the military is. It's a pretty big deal, and so they need to get the focus right, stop thinking about social justice in the military. And the crux of the whole thing, of course, besides the cost and the time spent on this issue, is that it took a step toward preserving the values that should be in a country like this. The country was founded on biblical morality, and that's really what the article gets into a lot. So He's comparing it to the last days of the Roman Empire, the type of cultural and intellectual decadence that has been that tore down that empire and that has been tearing down this country, and at least this ruling is a step in the other direction.
Yeah, it's a good point because there is historical precedent for what we're seeing culturally here in the U.S. I guess there's sort of this, I don't know, it seems like there's an idea out there that like they're crossing boundaries and new frontiers that have never been explored before. But all this has been done before in many places, including Rome. And we can look back at the history and see how it went. So there's precedent for some of these cultural changes we see.
Yeah, and it's to me, it's even worse because Rome didn't have a volunteer system. The U.S. Army is all volunteers. So I'm actually writing an article right now on how 25% or less of our population is eligible for military service because of health issues.
Wow.
That's men, women, transgender, whatever you want to call yourself. That's a quarter of the country. That's not very many people when it used to be 50% in the 70s, I think. And that's the problem, though, is it's volunteer. We don't impress people. We won't have the draft unless we're in a major war. And so it's a very difficult situation. In ancient Rome, they could force anyone to be in the army. And it was law that you had to be for a certain time period. But what happened with Rome is their own people became so decadent and so soft and basically effeminate that they had to hire the barbarians to defend themselves against the barbarians until they all turned on Rome. So that's basically what's going to happen if we keep on this path, that America will have to enlist our enemies to protect us. And that's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Well, it's really an interesting thing. From Breitbart. Delling poll, Trump's transgender military ban is the best thing ever. I'm sure he'll get a lot of positive mail and a lot of negative mail.
Strong stance to take there.
It's a strong stance to take, yeah, for sure, in this current climate anyway. You have another one real quick just from Town Hall. This is kind of an ongoing situation, this undercover videos. Says undercover video, Planned Parenthood uses a dismemberment technique to get around partial birth abortion ban. So there are laws on the books that say, look, you can do this act, but only in a certain way. But even that's being skirted.
Right. And we're not going to get into all the details just because we don't want to force this on anyone listening. But I would encourage people who can't handle it to go to the Center for Medical Progress. They do have a lot of videos that just show people talking behind the scenes. They think they're speaking in private about what is actually going on in these abortion clinics. And it's ghoulish, it's demonic, and they're very open about it when they think that no one is recording them. It's pretty disturbing. But the crux of this is that there is a federal ban on partial birth abortions where basically the baby comes partway out, still alive, and then is killed even partly out of the womb. That is technically not allowed, and yet we see Planned Parenthood doing whatever they can to get around it, basically poisoning the fetus or using other means to kill the baby before it comes out. So even if it's moments before, just to technically avoid the baby partially coming out, they will kill it right before it comes out.
It's unbelievable. There's a lot of write-ups on thetrumpet.com from a few years ago that talked about some of what happened here, and they're difficult reads, but I mean, it is the reality of our society, so you can check those out there as well. You just have to. Sometimes you just have to stop and say, "What has become of us?
Mm-hmm.
What have we done to ourselves?" Can look at so many topics and just think, "This is a nightmare."
And all it really takes for them is to check the right box on a piece of paper, and they can get away with doing this. They know that they're coming as close to breaking the law as they can, and then getting around it on a technicality, and then checking the right box and getting off scot-free. So that's. It just shows you how far we're willing to go to sort of rid ourselves of unwanted human beings.
Yeah, unbelievable. That's from Town Hall. You can check that out. Also, just a quick one before we get to your stories, Abraham. This one's exciting if you like treasure. Who doesn't like treasure? Is anyone against treasure? Treasure hunters may have found gold on a ship sunk by Hitler. Sign me up. I want to look at it. Well, it may sound like a Nicolas Cage movie, they say. British treasure hunters are hoping to collect some very real money. The Sun reports a box possibly carrying 4 tons of valuable metal has been found by UK-based Advanced Marine Services aboard a Nazi ship that sank off the coast of Iceland in 1939. The metal could be gold, they think, stolen from South American banks, and it may be worth $130 million. That'd be cool. Pull that up there and find that, and you could, I don't know what they do with it, I guess. Who does it go to?
I think the government or museum or whoever owned it in the first place, if they can figure that out.
Try to figure that out and the spoils of war. But yeah, so anyway, they think they might have found that. Sorry, when they said Nicolas Cage, I lost all sense of reason. I just kept thinking of people impersonating him.
Isn't it his idea to take every movie offer that he ever has seen? Isn't that what he has even said?
Oh, has he?
Well, I mean, he's in a lot of movies.
He is.
And I'm sure he's very rich because of it, even if some of the premises of the movies seem absurd.
I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know why, like, some comedians really go after him. I know some of the movies have been okay. They're entertaining. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's not like we're expecting, you know, a Shakespearean tale. I mean, it's, you know, they're looking at the Declaration of Independence looking for a treasure map. I mean, it kind of is what it is. Yeah. But poor guy takes a bad rap.
Yeah, it is interesting. Especially in the last 3 years, he's almost been ostracized from acting because of all the jokes about him. And I think the funniest one I saw, though, was it wasn't like a comedian. He was some guy making a video in his basement. And he was pretending to be Nicolas Cage. And he woke up and someone showed him like a symbol or something. And he's like, the Constitution. We need to go to Washington, D.C. Like that was his first thought.
Right.
When they showed him like this obscure picture.
Right.
And so it's just, it just cracks me up because I'm like, well, that's half of what the movie is anyway.
Yeah, well, that's the idea of those movies. They're not supposed to be accurate. They're just supposed to be somewhat entertaining, I guess. The science is getting into all kinds of things, including human life. This is from Technology Review. Rewriting life. First human embryos edited in the U.S. Researchers have demonstrated they can efficiently improve the DNA of human embryos. Haven't there been, we talk about movies and crazy ideas, haven't there been like movies about this type of thing and it never works out? Not that that's a guideline for anything, but I mean, and when you start messing around with life and the way it happens, it doesn't seem like the results are very good typically.
Yeah, this is, I think, a disturbing trend, and this has already happened in China, but this is the first time it's happened in the U.S., and it was done in Portland, Oregon by MIT Tech, and it was reported by MIT first. But basically what they've been doing is they've been taking embryos and impregnating them with eggs impregnated with sperm from men who had known diseases, heredity diseases, to where their children were going to have them anyway. So they would take the sperm, put it in the egg, and then have these embryos. And then they would inject DNA-altering chemicals to try to get rid of the bad protein link that led to that disease, whether it be some kind of blood disease or something that the baby would have been born with. So that was a premise of their study, and they've been successfully doing this. And they don't allow the embryo to live more than a few days. Mm. It's against the law. By Congress passed a law where any of these experiments, they can't allow the embryo to become a fetus and then into a human being or into a baby. So these embryos are destroyed after a few days, but they have been doing this successfully. They call it germline engineering, and they believe that they can successfully remove those diseases from a embryo, from a future child. And so a lot of scientists are excited about this because they think it will lead to people avoiding a lifetime of having to deal with these diseases. A lot of people are against it, though, because they think it could lead to designer babies where parents go in and they want to pick what their kid will look like or what traits it will have, and the scientists can basically alter wherever the embryo is to what the parents want. And then there's lots of religious organizations that say there's no way human beings should be tampering with life because that's not our prerogative. So there's a lot of opposition to this. And the scary thing is there's only one law preventing these embryos from being born in a test tube, basically. Mm. So if Congress ever repeals that, we could have the first genetically modified human or baby possibly in the next few years. And it's just, I think, a terrifying development because there's really no limit to whether our own scientists do this or other nations where they will take it.
Yeah, well, and again, it's just like the climate change thing where science, the scientific community is assuming that they know how everything works. What happened? You know, they think it'll all be great, but it'll probably be something will happen that they're not suspecting or not thinking will occur. So we just, how would we know? I mean, and that's, it's playing God in a way, and that's what's, and then the other thing that's so ironic about it, you look at our last two stories. On one hand, we're trying to figure out ways to kill humans born naturally, and on the other hand, we want to make some different ones in some sort of a synthetic way. These are like wild extremes to the normal life span and purpose. You know, it's interesting, too. I've been reading this book. I've talked about this, about Hiroshima. And, you know, people were radiated, and they came down with radiation sickness. And the doctors were just amazed by how it could be two people, exact same situation, and one person, their body would respond one way, another person's another way. Like, there was no way they could pin down what would happen to people. We just don't know the thing that struck me about that was that, yeah, you just don't know, because they gave an example of where a doctor looked at this guy and said, oh, this is what will happen to him. This is the way this disease goes. He'll be dead in 2 weeks. He didn't die. He recovered. And they don't know why. So, I mean, we just don't understand what the human body is doing in a lot of ways. And to get in there and start messing with it at the foundation of life, I mean, we don't know what we're messing with, I don't think.
Yeah, and you mentioned with the embryos, too, they only let them live for a few days before being destroyed. And yet there's no such law about that when it comes to it actually being inside the woman's womb. You can pretty much go as far as you want before terminating that life. So there is a huge double standard there, and it's like certain people think life begins here or begins here. There's different laws for different situations, and we're not going to the ultimate authority for deciding how that works. And then even talking about trying to alter the DNA, that just, there is no way to pin down what's going to happen, and you're just playing with life like you're in charge of it, and you're not.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic. It'd be a lot more to say about it, but I want to get to your last story before we run out of time here, too. This is from the independent.co.uk. Bible says Canaanites were wiped out by Israelites. That's what they say. But scientists just found their descendants living in Lebanon. So their take is that, well, we found proof the Bible's not accurate. Or could it be that they just don't know what the Bible says?
Yeah, this article infuriated me just because I think the research side of it is really interesting. But the people, whoever wrote this article and many other ones I've found out there, they didn't even read the Bible before making these assertions about it. And so, especially this one, they start off with Richard Dawkins calling God a bunch of different things. And a big reason Richard Dawkins thinks that way is because of God's command to destroy the Canaanites or to get them out of the land he promised them. And so that's what this revolves around, that the promise that they would be destroyed. And then but then scientists found this DNA. They found four bodies, ancient bodies. They're able to extract DNA from them. The bodies were found in ancient Sidon, which is in Lebanon today. And they found that 97% or about 90% of Lebanese genetic code or their genes come from these ancient Canaanite people. So there's a match between the ancient Canaanite people they found in the Sidon area and the modern Lebanese people. And so they think, well, obviously all the Canaanites couldn't have been killed off by the Israelites because there are some descendants in modern-day Lebanon. And so this article goes on to say that this discredits the Bible because the Bible thoroughly indicates that all the Canaanites were wiped out. But that's simply not the case. And even in this article, they say, like, well, the Bible says not all of them were, but it's probably hyperbole, and obviously the author's relying. That's pretty much what they're implying. But it's not true at all. And the most frustrating thing to me is they don't even quote a Bible scripture
right
in their article.
Well, they're experts, just take their word for it.
Yeah, and they say that they don't even produce archaeological evidence, which does prove overwhelmingly of of Joshua's two campaigns, one in the north, one in the south of Canaan, and everything, Jericho, all those things are proven with archaeology that Israel did go in and fight the Canaanites. But here they're saying that it, archaeologically you can't prove it. So to me, it's just frustrating that way that they don't even quote the Bible to disprove it if that's what they're trying to do. But then even thus, what they found with the genetic relation between the Lebanese and the Canaanites is actually proves the Bible to be right. And it actually proves that the Bible is a very accurate historical source.
Yeah. So maybe you can get some of the scriptures to show the Bible side of it.
Sure. So Deuteronomy has two commands to get rid of the Canaanites out of their land. Genesis 10, verse 19, gives you the borders of the Canaanites. They go from Sidon to Gaza over to Sodom. So basically, Lebanon to the south end of the Dead Sea over to where the Palestinians are today on the West Bank. That triangle is where the Canaanites lived. So that's the area we're talking about. And then there are several scriptures in Joshua 16 and 17. Joshua 16:10, Joshua 17:12, Joshua 17:13, that say that each tribe, the Ephraimites and the Manassites, failed to get rid of the Canaanites. So after Joshua did his two campaigns, Joshua was the leader, but he had the tribes try to get rid of the rest of the city-states of the Canaanites, and they couldn't do it. So even in Joshua's lifetime, they failed to do that. And then in the book of Judges, there are about a dozen scriptures that say that Israel failed to get rid of the Canaanites. And it says Israel dwelt among the Canaanites. Neither did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites. Neither did Naphtali drive out the Canaanites. Neither did Zebulun drive out the Canaanites. And it's the early times of the Judges after Joshua died. And it's just showing, the Bible is showing historically that the Israelites failed to obey God's command and that the Canaanites were allowed to dwell with them. All the way up, in fact, until King David's time and Solomon's time, the Pharaoh of Egypt went up and killed some Canaanites so he can give their city as a gift to Solomon's wife, which was his daughter. And even in the book of Ezra, God talks about the Canaanites being there. So all the way up until the Persian time. So it's not a great mystery. If you actually read the Bible, it's not a mystery that the Canaanites weren't destroyed because they're mentioned through thousands of years of history. And what is more, the Bible shows that the Israelites were terrible at obeying God's commands, and that's the reason why the Canaanites are mentioned in that way, because it illustrates that Israel failed to do what they were supposed to do. And the law of the hardships of Israel in the Bible came because the Canaanites were there and they intermingled with them.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I think this highlights some of what you see happening with people that would reject the Bible out of hand. An article is written. It sounds authoritative. It ignores some pretty obvious things. But probably a lot of people would read it and say, well, they're scientists. They know what they're talking about. And maybe they heard a little something about Canaan. They're not sure. Anyway, what they agree with it. Great. Sounds good. They move on. And then anytime something comes up later, they'll remember that. Well, hey, but wasn't the Bible wrong about that Canaanite thing? And that's what happens, where people will kind of just take something at face value, assume that it's correct, and then use that as a basis for whatever they want to believe, which is usually that they kind of want to do their own thing. And I think that happens in a lot of cases. I think this is just another example of that, where you don't have enough people that really, or they don't have the platform to really stand up and say, actually, you're wrong, and let me show you why. And so this will just pass on, and a lot of people will probably read it and say, oh, that's the way it is, and then base a lot of their thinking on a completely false and easily debunked write-up.
That article sounds intentionally dishonest. Either that or they're making a huge assumption that just because God commanded it uniformly, everyone whom God has ever given a command to has obeyed perfectly.
Right.
And how often do we see in every aspect of everything around us that people do not obey God perfectly? That's just not reality. So just because there's a command doesn't mean it's kept. Everyone knows that. That it's just so simple, and they clearly had to have purposely not looked in the Bible to be in ignorance of it, that's unlikely. They probably know that's in the Bible and just realize that, like you said, people are going to be duped into believing it because they won't look into it themselves. They'll take that as total trusted authority.
Yeah, and that's what the other thought that I was having was similar to that was, what's their point? I mean, why are they doing this? It's because they want to try to make the Bible be false, right? I mean, that's the goal of why they would write an article like that. They have a desire to not follow it. They don't want to follow the rules either. And so if they can say, well, it's made up, then they can feel better about going on with their genetic modifications, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's the thing about that got me about the articles. They brought on Richard Dawkins, everything he said, and saying God's genocidal and he's a murderer and all these things. But look at the stories we just talked about in our society. So yeah. You think a godless society, a nation without God, is better? When if you look at modern science practices, they're more barbaric than anything God ever commanded anyone to do. I mean, and that's obvious if when people know the Bible, but yeah, it's the abortion and genetic germ engineering, as they're calling it, with the embryos and many, many other things. Our nation are murdering. We've murdered 150 million embryos, and we think we're more righteous than God. That's just utter foolishness, this to say the least.
Well, look at the people God told Israel to wipe out. They were all doing the same things. They were heavily involved in child sacrifice and every sort of sodomy. They mercifully needed to have their lives ended because they were living in such misery.
Very interesting, interesting write-up there, and it's good. It's good that you saw that because it's worth getting into. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live and for this week as well. Make sure you listen for the Key to David program, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and the Trumpet Hour Week in Review this weekend here on KPCG. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau, have a great rest of your weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.